Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. And it's Tuesday, time for our book pick segment, and I couldn't be more thrilled. I love that we get together every week and meet with incredible booksellers to find incredible books for incredible readers, and it's a good thing. This morning, we have two booksellers from two bookstores joining us, the books that we should pay attention to. And this week, we welcome Jesse Hassinger from the Odyssey Bookshop in South Hadley, Massachusetts. Hello, Jesse. How are you?
I am doing well, Joe. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a great pleasure to see you, as always. We also welcome Matt Tannenbaum from the bookstore in Lenox, Massachusetts. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Joe.
How you doing?
It's Tuesday morning again.
I know. It's pretty cool, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about, a lot of neat books, a lot of places to go, a lot of different subjects to discuss. Jesse, where would you like to begin?
This book comes out today. There Are Rivers in the Sky by L.F. Shafak. This is one of my favorite books that I've read so far this year, and I think it's going to stay on that list for quite a while. The central narrative follows the life of King Arthur of the Sewers and Slums, from when he was born on the shores of the polluted Thames riverbank in 1840 through to his death along the Tigris in 1876. During his short life, he was wildly enamored with Mesopotamia and especially the ancient artifacts that were beginning to be funneled into the British Museum at the time. While his full life is charted in this novel in beautiful and lyric detail, he is but one-third of the narrative driving force behind this amazing book. His life is the connecting link between two other narratives that interweave throughout the book, that of Nareen, a 9-year-old Yazidi girl, and Zalika, a hydrologist who is going through an eruptive life change in the early 21st century. Stepping back one more level is the introductory tale around which everyone in the story revolves, King Ashurbanipal's Mesopotamian court, and a special tablet of the Epic of Gilgamesh that he reveres. And yet there is still one more level that L.F. Shafak weaves through her epic, a single drop of water that literally touches every main character and holds the memories of the universe in its simple yet timeless composition of molecules. To say that Shafak is juggling a lot is not an understatement, but the reader never once thinks that it is overloaded. She is able to weave a tapestry as fine as any rug and as illusorily simple. To say more would give too much away of the beautiful secrets that are hidden throughout this book, but suffice it to say, this will be a novel to stand up against some of the best epic literature. Two recent epic books are certainly touchstones, The Covenant of Water and Demon Copperhead, but for me, it was The English Patient that continued to come to mind. Not that There Are Rivers in the Sky is derivative in any way, but these are the heights that L.F. Shafak is able to attain.
L.F. Shafak is the author of There Are Rivers in the Sky. Great way to start off. Matt.
Joe, we're going from Mesopotamia to Chicago, Mesopotamia in 1876 to Chicago and the Democratic National Convention of 1968. This is a book by Heather Hendershot, When the News Broke, Chicago in 1968 and the Polarizing of America, published by the University of Chicago Press, came out about a year ago, just came out last month in paperback, and this is a this book has taken me down memory lane to those heady days in Chicago, August 1968. I didn't make it out there. I was invited, but I didn't go. I was a college journalist, and this book is just is not just about America.
What were you doing? What did you have going on?
Joe, we have plenty of time off air to talk about
all right,
that.
All right.
Come by, visit me at the shop. I'll tell
all
you.
All right, tell the story.
Yeah,
okay,
I've told this story many times. But this is not just American history. This is media history. So this is when the CBS, Communist Broadcasting Service of America, NBC, Negro Broadcasting Company of America, you know, everybody was convinced because they were showing the riots in the street and they were not showing the provocation, in quotes, of the protesters, that the media was on the side of the protesters, and they were therefore this was the liberal bias being exposed on a national scale. And Heather Hendershot is a professor of journalism or critical studies at Northwestern, and she's written numbers of books on media and the rise of the Christian evangelicalism. And the story of what happens on the national scale in media. So this is a terrific book, and I remember watching a TV broadcast in 1986 in South Dakota, visiting my in-laws, and we were watching the news, and the local news ended, and after the last commercial break, the guy came back on and he said, "That's it for the local news. Now stay tuned for the national feed, and we'll find out what those fools back east are up to."
Oh.
This is what I remember. I was sat there in my father-in-law's living room listening to this. This gave me an idea of what goes on outside of the Albany listening area. So,
it is Heather Hendershot is the name of the author. The book is When the News Broke. Of course, the Democratic National Convention taking place this week in Chicago, and
So the media was, and this book talks a lot about, Heather Hendershot talks a lot about how the powers to be, the powers in control, kept the media. Let's say Mayor Daley did not allow the TV crews he didn't give them permits to set up their vans around the convention center, so they couldn't broadcast the riots that were going on outside. But they did anyway.
Jesse, you're up.
I should have on my list after that The Knicks by Nathan Hill.
Oh, right.
But I don't. I'll stay with nonfiction, though. It seems like we have kind of a mirror image inverted. I have more fiction than nonfiction, and you have more nonfiction than fiction here.
That's
so
right.
This is a nice balance.
It's good, yeah.
Yeah. So this next book that I have to recommend is called Survival is a Promise, The Eternal Life of Audre Lorde by Alexis Pauline Gums. And this is the first biography of Audre Lorde in over 20 years. And it is the first research to be able to utilize a lot of her archives that have heretofore been either in private hands or behind lock and key. So Alexis Pauline Gums was able to access a lot of amazing information. And with that, she has essentially written a key to time travel. And I'll reference that in a moment. I wrote a really long review of this, and I'm going to jump around here a little bit because it's too long to read on air, but Survival is a Promise is a key to time travel. Open, for instance, to chapter 48, The House of Yamaya, and one is taken deep into the ocean to be regaled by the sonorous conversations of the Atlantic gray whales. Gums writes, "Gray whales are the mammals that migrate the farthest. Their reach, 19,000 kilometers, 1.5 times the diameter of the Earth. If we were listening, gray whales could teach us that the whole planet is home. Home is not a small or separate thing," end quote. Home was a difficult aspect of Audre's life, so the metaphor here about the gray whales being able to travel worldwide and calling it all home is fitting. And like the Atlantic gray whale, Audre Lorde traveled the globe, creating home for the black feminist, lesbian, socialist activists that she continually sought out in Berlin, St. Croix, Boston, Spelman College, Hawaii, and wherever she found herself otherwise. One aspect of her life's work was to create spaces of home for the multiple marginalized groups that, in growing up, herself a black feminist, lesbian, social activist, there were no spaces that welcomed her in. Gums' metaphor here of the Atlantic gray whale and Audre Lorde is astute, as are all the other ways in which she demonstrates Lorde's connection to the natural world. In this book, Lord is also a hurricane, a lightning strike, graphite, obsidian, tectonic plates, light refracting through diamonds or water or the air at dawn or dusk, and a multitude of others. Ultimately, this is where the book becomes the key to time travel. Gums makes Lord's life a star that burns bright, attracts all kinds of satellites, and ultimately becomes a black hole whereby time and space rupture to create an everything, everywhere, all at once moment where Lord is simultaneously creating kitchen table press with Barbara Smith, accepting the appreciation of a lifetime in 1990 at the Boston I Am Your Sister Cella conference, mentoring generations of lesbian and gay black writers in person before acceptance was much more than a dream. And through her words, after death, when queer acceptance has made stuttering inroads, Lord has touched so many people throughout her life, and so many more since her passing, that she cannot be anywhere but everywhere.
Wow. That's heavy. That's great.
Jesse, you're a writer.
I am.
Survival. That's good. Survival is a promise, and that's great. Alexis Pauline Grums is the author. All right.
And who's the publisher then?
That is FSG.
FSG. Okay.
Yeah. So this comes on the heels of their King biography. I'm expecting, and I think a lot of people are, that this is going to be sweeping some of the prizes this coming year.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Terrific. Yeah. Audre Lorde. Yeah. We had her the cancer journals way back in the 70s, and now it's gone through a couple of different other printings.
Yeah.
And we sell her a lot. Yeah, I've got to get this book in.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that.
It's a great one. And to beef up your Audre Lorde collections as well at the same time.
Right. Okay. Advice from booksellers. This is what we do.
Yeah, this is good. I'm glad we're helping the backlist portion of the...
Exactly.
Yes.
This is not backlist. And this is... So see, I'm going to go to my one fiction book.
Great.
Just we'll go back and forth. And this is a book, Joe, The Heart in Winter, by Kevin Barry, that you have talked to Barry on the radio.
We had Kevin on the show, on the book show, and an amazing writer and someone I really greatly admire. I think anyone who knows has listened to the book show for 4 seconds knows that I have a penchant for Irish fiction.
The Irish.
and this book takes place in the United States, however.
As opposed to a Toy Beans book called Long Island that mostly takes place
in
Ireland.
Right. Yes. Right. Yes, it is different.
So I'm halfway through this book, Joe. Don't tell me what happens.
I won't.
It's very exciting. I guess I got a couple of people asking me about it. I hadn't heard about it. Who's the publisher? It is Doubleday, and we've been selling it. I think I've just about sold out. And we're getting more copies in today or tomorrow if you're interested. And it is the dialogue, the way that it's written without punctuation, without a sense of you have to guess who's talking for a while there, and then you get it. And I'm reading at the same time another older book called The Widow Nash by Jamie Harrison, also about characters in Montana at the early part of the 20th century. This takes place in Butte, or starts off in Butte, Montana. And Jamie Harrison's book is the character Darcy, or the Widow Nash, is in Livingston, Montana. And I looked at the map, and they're pretty close. So I'm expecting these two characters, these two books, to intertwine, at least in my head. So this is The Heart in Winter, and you've read Night Boat to Tangier, too, yes?
Yes.
Yeah, that a couple of years ago. That was
terrific.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's what sort of led me to this one.
So this is, yeah, Jesse, you're right. I've not been reading a lot of fiction. I've been mostly into the nonfiction, which is a big change for me since I was probably your age. I hope to get back to fiction.
For those of you in the radio world, Jesse would be younger than Matt.
Thank you.
So you know.
Thank you,
Joe. Because your voice wouldn't allow that to be known. That's why I'm saying it. Go ahead.
Thank you.
You're up.
So my next book.
See what I did there, Mike? I brought the show to a screeching halt. Just a dead stop. Go ahead, Jeff.
Not giving me much to work with. My next book that I would love to recommend to everybody is not out yet, but is coming out very soon. It is Rachel Kushner's new novel called Creation Lake. Those of you who are keyed into awards will know that this was on the long list for the Booker Prize. And those of you who are keyed into the Odyssey Bookshop might know that she is going to be in person at the Odyssey on Thursday, September 12th. So we are very thrilled to be able to welcome her and hope to see many of you out there in Radioland in person for that. This book has taken the genre of the spy thriller and turned it on its head. Where some thriller authors before her have injected philosophizing into their books, Kushner is almost completely reversing this, as there is at least as much time spent on the philosophy of humankind's existence, creation, and survival as there is on the narrative thrust of main character Sadie's infiltration of a left-wing anarchist environmental, possibly radical group in the French countryside. Kushner's brilliance in this book is that these philosophical passages are more fascinating than even the Le Carré-like infiltration narrative of Sadie and the anarchists. Kushner creates a wonderfully complex character in Sadie, someone who both easily fits into the trope of disgraced law enforcement officer gone PI, in this case a disgraced FBI agent turned to the private sector, and also calls into question her own motives. One of the prevailing questions that Kushner allows the readers to grapple with is whether or not Sadie is doing something virtuous or divisive, as if her own politics and if her own politics are aligned with modern sensibilities around the worldwide climate catastrophes and the capitalist investment in the decline of the environment. Ultimately, Kushner is able to balance the philosophies and Sadie's liminality around her political position and allow the reader some counterpunctual relief from too many polemics one way or the other. This is the brilliance of the book and Kushner's approach to inverting the thriller genre. Indeed, she does such a great job of this that Kushner disappears completely, leaving Sadie to tell her own story in the first person and creating a type of autofiction novel in the process. Call this Jean Le Carré by way of Annie Ernaux or vice versa. This is Kushner's most accomplished technical feat yet.
The name of the book is Creation Lake. It is, Jesse mentioned, longlisted for the Booker Prize, and it hasn't even been released in this country yet. It'll be released on Tuesday of next week. That also will be the day that we will air our interview with Rachel on the book show. Rachel Kushner on the book show at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, and the book will be out and of course, coming to the Odyssey Bookshop for an event on September
12th.
Excellent. All right, Matt.
Back to this nonfiction. I got to start reading some more fiction. This Kushner book sounds terrific.
Yeah, it's really good.
It is.
Jesse, how do you get a chance to read all these books?
I don't sleep. Yeah, I have a lot of no time except reading, and a lot of advanced copies that are sitting on my shelf.
Okay. This is, I'm going to start with a new book that just came out about a week ago. What is today? August? Maybe 2 weeks ago. The Bookshop by Evan Friss, A History of the American Bookstore, published by Viking Books. Evan Friss is married to a former bookseller from the Three Lives Bookstore in New York City, and he introduces the story of his research with the Three Lives, and then he goes back in time to these are just American bookshops, and he starts with Benjamin Franklin's bookstore, the Old Corner Bookstore in Boston. He goes up to Marshall Field's. I didn't know. So I learned a lot about bookstores in this book. Marshall Field's department store on the third floor or the sixth floor of their department store, they had an incredible book department, and the buyer became a person who influenced publishers. And then Evan Friss goes on to talk about my old bookshop, the Gotham Bookmart in New York City, and Francis Steloff, and then on to other shops. I haven't quite finished the book because I read a couple of pages and I go and visit these bookstores on the pages. So he's writing a very nice book, Evan Friss. I really enjoy it. I'm pretty sure, now we've sold a number of copies, I'm pretty sure that people other than booksellers, like ourselves, would, and Joe would like this book.
Oh, sure. You want to be in the company of a bookstore at all times.
Right. Yeah. There it is.
Evan Friss is the author. The Bookshop is the name of the book. All right, Jesse.
There is a Rio Grande in Heaven. I just love the title of this one.
Yes. Different from There Are Rivers in the Sky.
Yes.
And that drop of water in Mesopotamia that has lingered in my head.
Obviously, there is water. I mean, it has been raining for so long here, so that maybe had something to do with this list. There's a Rio Grande in Heaven by Ruben Reyes Jr. This is a debut collection of short stories that asks more questions than it gives answers. It is in the tradition of Octavia Butler and Adrienne Marie Brown's fiction. It really asks many ideas, the reader to confront many ideas, such as how would things be different if we didn't subscribe to the white supremacist imagination of the past? How could the future change if we were able to imagine a new reality? And how can we create a roadmap to manifesting it? This book has begun to build that roadmap. And in it, author Ruben Reyes shows us a different place, a better place, like the one in which the people win the battle, as Reyes writes at the end of the first story. The Spanish conquistadors never return. There is no war, no aftermath, no nation, no blood or sweat or singed skin in the dirt. He is referring to the initial contact with Europeans that the people of what becomes Argentina, I believe, is. So by imagining a future where that never happened, how can we live a better future today?
Wow. Okay. So the name of the book is There is a Rio Grande in Heaven, by Ruben Reyes Jr. Matt.
Back to bookshops. Paul Yamazaki is the longtime buyer and manager at City Lights Bookstore in San Francisco. Now, it occurs to me that I think Susanna Herman's talked about this book a couple of months ago, but it just crossed my shelves about 2 weeks ago. And I read it, Jesse, I read it in one night. It's only 80 pages, so. And it's the story, the book is called Reading the Room, A Bookseller's Tale, and it's interviews with Paul Yamazaki, and he tells the story of how he became a bookseller and what he does as a bookseller. And it's the most, this is the book that I'm hoping that other people other than booksellers would like to read, because this gives you an insight into what we do. And at one point, there's a line here I want to read from, and he says, There are things that we as booksellers do in selecting the books we stock and how we present these. Being able to create the balance in the bookstore between what's essential and what can sell is such a critical thing. Certain titles may not sell that well because they've been around for a long time, but someone browsing philosophy who doesn't see Walter Benjamin or Cedric Robinson might not come back because they don't think the store is serious. And Jesse, I don't know about your shop, but we have a lot of books that are books that people say, "I never saw this book before. Where did you get this book? I'm going to be interested in this book, or I'm going to come back and get it next time." And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But it's those books that sit on the shelf that make the bookstore what it is. And I'm so glad to read Paul Yamazaki talking about that very thing.
Jesse.
And Yamazaki is City Lights book.
City Lights, right.
Yeah, out in San Francisco, one of the most beautiful bookstores, I think, in extant. So I see in you have two books left, and one of them kind of ties in with my next one.
Okay.
I'm going to let you guess which one after I read my review, and maybe we can jump into that one next.
We have 2.5 minutes. Just
okay.
So you all know.
The Rich People Have Gone Away by Regina Porter. This is the first novel about COVID-19 that I've come across that utilizes lockdown in a way that doesn't center it as the main problem of the book, but rather just something that everyone in the novel is similarly dealing with. As such, it is a background not too dissimilar from the New York City boroughs that Regina Porter's characters live in, and the characters are amazing. They are all interrelated, and they come from such disparate different backgrounds. The center mystery in this book is the disappearance of one of the characters' wives, and there's a question of, did she just flee? Did she use COVID-19 as a reason or as a ability to disappear? Or was she perhaps more nefariously murdered or taken or disappeared? It is like a good Hitchcock film. The suspense in the story doesn't center around the disappearance, but what the disappearance means for all of the other characters whose lives are now affected.
The rich people have gone away by Regina Porter. All right, well, Matt, for the final book, which one does this correspond
with? You have forced my hand.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the Grease book.
Well, the picture book on old Corfu. Come and visit that. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. But this is Ian Frazier's new book just out called Paradise Bronx, The Life and Times of New York's Greatest Borough. And Ian Frazier, we're hoping to get him to the Berkshires sometime this fall for an event. This is a big book. I haven't read this book all. This is over 400 pages, almost 500 pages, and it's a walking tour of and a history of the Bronx. And if you've ever spent any time in the Bronx, he talks about the history and Jacob Bronk and how it came to be. And he tells the story of how the New York Times and the New York Post have different versions of the Bronx. The New York Times calls it the Bronx with a small T. The New York Post calls it the Bronx with a capital T.
All right.
That's media.
Just a little. The name of the book is Paradise Bronx. For more information, you can go to the websites odysseybks.com for Odyssey Bookshop and bookstoreinlenox.com for the bookstore. All of our book picks are listed online at wamc.org/roundtable. Matt and Jesse, you're the best. Thank you so much.
Thank
Always
you,
a pleasure.
Joe.
Be
Thanks,
well.
Joe.
You're listening to the Roundtable.